Welcome to Bicommerce Weekly Podcast. My name is James Serene. Today we are examining what the events in Syria, the Turkish invasion, the US pullout, what that all means for Israel. And I'm delighted to be joined by Eran Lerman, former Deputy National Security Advisor. Welcome to the podcast, Eran.
Thank you for having me, James.
So the first thing I really wanted to ask is, you know, from Israel's perspective, and we've seen a lot of articles about this in the Israeli media, looking at the different elements of how things are rapidly changing in Syria. What are the kind of three worst things, I suppose, that is happening now as a result of the Turkish invasion and the US pullout that Israel is most concerned about? What are those three things?
Well, in the right order of seriousness and immediacy, first of all, there's the fact that the SDF was forced, under the pressure of the Turkish invasion, to allow Syrian regime forces access to more or less the entire area of the land that we have come to call Rojava, the western parts of larger Kurdistan. In other words, Syria and the Kurdish areas of northern Syria. That means that under Russian air cover, Assad's own troops are more or less unified 90% of Syria, or even more than that, with the Turks holding the rest in Afrin, in the Idlib area, and along the newly created security zone. Would that mean that the American position in Tanf would become untenable, and therefore the border of Jordan, Iraq, and Syria, the triangle area, would come under danger?
So that's just to clarify for our listeners that area is an important base called Al-Tanf, isn't it? Just in that three-way border.
US is holding it against the possibility of Iranian forces using it as a land bridge to the borders of Israel and also to destabilize Jordan. So that's one important aspect. Will the Iranians and the Shia militias active now in Syria under the guidance of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps and under the directives of Mr. Qasem Soleimani, would they use the new situation to build finally this land bridge from Iran through Iraq, through Syria, to Lebanon, to the coast of the Mediterranean, and to Israel's borders? That's our uppermost concern right now. And here, our main strategy would be to try and drive a wedge, as we've been doing for the last 4 years, between the Russians and the Iranians. Both are supporters of the Assad regime, but they have very different purposes and different perspectives about the future. So that's issue number one. Mm-hmm. Issue number two, of lesser importance, but still quite dangerous, is the possibility that the much weakened Kurdish authorities would lose control of the thousands, upwards of 11,000 maybe, IS, Islamic State, Daesh, murderers, activists who are there. The Americans have revealed their own fears of that by grabbing the two British citizens known as the Beatles, the beheaders of Gianfoli, and they indicated by doing so that they understand the possibility of loss of control in the camps and prison facilities that are where the Kurdish or SDF forces are now holding IS elements. So that's another danger for us and for the world. The third, in a much more vague but long-term fashion, is this question about American resilience, about American withdrawal, about the sentiments expressed not only by Trump, but also by Elizabeth Warren in the Democratic debate, that the time has come for America to pull out of our region, pull out of the Middle East. And obviously this would leave a wide open space for the ambitions and interests of parties which we see as much less congenial to Israel's long-term interests. think the visit of Secretary Pompeo came straight from his talks in Ankara to Jerusalem is designed to allay, to some extent, this fear that was expressed literally across the spectrum of Israeli society. We have to bear in mind that it is easily carried over into the political debate. People who do not like Prime Minister Netanyahu say, look what you've done. You've put all your cards at the table of a man that cannot be relied upon. And look at Trump and how he's doing, and look at his style and look at his substance. Given the very complicated Israeli political scene, some of these expressions of dismay and fear need to be taken, as they say in good Latin, cum grano salis, with a grain of salt, because they are directly or indirectly designed to make Netanyahu look bad. Having said so, the sense of betrayal or fear that the Americans could turn their back, as they did, on an ally, has led to some visceral reactions here. It is modified somewhat by the fact that Trump also saw fit to speak very bluntly to the Turks, warning them against harming the Kurdish population. Don't be a fool, I will destroy your economy, and all sorts of subtle niceties in the best Trump style.
Yeah.
But having said all this, there was a shiver, a tremor here about the implications of this diminishing American profile in the region, and I don't think this will go away soon.
Yeah, I mean, just to sort of expand on that point, I mean, even before this particular incident, that there was a series of events that certain U.S. allies in the region pointed to express their fear of U.S. reliability, and that began for some people with the decision not to bomb Assad, and when he crossed the red line on chemical weapons by Obama, then the Iran nuclear deal. But this sort of cements that, doesn't it? I mean, I think that's
The one recent element that was added was the American decision not to respond militarily, first to the downing of the large drone, and then to the IRGC-led attack on the oil facilities of Aramco in Saudi Arabia, an attack that even France, Britain, and Germany now ascribe to direct Iranian intervention. So I have to say that on this specific point, I am a bit less worried than some of the commentators that I've heard in recent weeks, for the simple reason that when you have your two hands firmly on somebody's windpipe, it's not necessarily an intelligent thing to do to let one go so you can hit him in the face. The strangulation of the Iranian economy by American sanctions is effective. Even the Chinese, despite all sorts of rumors about a major deal with Iran, are shying away from specific transactions. So and from what we hear and what we see, the recklessness of Iranian behavior is a direct reflection of this sense that their economy is being shot. So in this respect, Trump uses economic strangulation or the threat of economic destruction, and he is not very, as I said, he was very subtle about threatening Erdogan, and reminding him that he's already done it once and brought Turkey around on the question of Pastor Brunson. So the use of economic weapons is a major American capacity. The United States still sits astride the international financial system. That's something that neither Russia nor China can equal. And so I'm not surprised that at the end of the day it was Pence and Pompeo, not Lavrov, who reaped the immediate reward of managing this interim agreement, interim arrangement in northern Syria.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've been in that situation where you're in the sort of National Security Council in Israel with the sort of politicians and the officials, and you're kind of familiar with the kind of discussions that they would need to be having. How do you think that some of those discussions are gonna proceed now, given everything that's going on? I mean, is there an urgent need to do anything operationally? I mean, Prime Minister Netanyahu has talked about helping the Kurds. I mean, is that likely to actually happen in a material way? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, quite frankly, military aid is not a serious proposition under the circumstances. It is not within the scope of our capacity to confront the Turks so far away from our borders, so close to theirs, face-to-face with the second largest military in NATO. On behalf of the people who have, for whom we have a profound moral sentiment, but no obligation. So that was not the question. Humanitarian aid is certainly in the cards. But what we have done is speak to people. And I think the lineup of people in Washington who spoke up against the abandonment of the Kurds is not accidentally quite aligned with the list of our firm friends there. And I would leave it, I would not say, you know, I would not take it any further. That's one thing. But more significantly, I think the cabinet discussions, to the extent that they can take place amidst the ongoing political crisis, need to focus on something else. If there's a lesson from what happened to the Kurds, is that the weak get no mercy, no tender mercies in our part of the world. And therefore, we have to be very strong, and we need to change priorities in our budget in order to be ready to face the possibility of conflict within the intermediate and longer future. Not necessarily the events in Syria do not lead to any direct, immediate threat. But they definitely make the Iranians more likely to be increasingly emboldened in attacking us, as well as Saudi Arabia from Yemen and from the Gulf. And that would definitely require us to be better prepared in various ways. Air defense, defense against not only incoming missiles, but incoming cruise missiles, which was apparently the weapon of choice in the Aramco attack, and the ground capabilities to crush and destroy Hezbollah if they're ever given the order by Iran to go after us.
Yeah.
So all of this is, I think, very much on the agenda of the government. We at JISS put together recently, and it's available on our website, a long set of recommendations, 14 major recommendations for the incoming Israeli government, which hasn't come in yet. And the first is to sustain our national cohesion, and the second is to be ready for the possibility of war. Unfortunately, it has become more real in an increasingly unstable region. The circumstances that enabled the breakthrough in the peace process that looked so promising 28 years ago, when Saddam was defeated, Bush 41 was dominant, the region seemed to be sailing into an orderly American hegemony. A generation later, these things look very, very remote from the realities that we now face, and we need to be ready for various consequences. The readier we are, the more likely the less likely they are to actually happen. Deterrence is of absolute importance for us.
Can I ask you just one extra question? I mean, you raised that point, which I think is very interesting, about this issue of cruise missiles. And I think a lot of people, even those who follow events closely in Israel and the wider region would have been quite surprised by some of the commentary this week. And I think it was Amos Harel who put this very clearly, where he sort of said, well, Israel has certain capability to intercept and destroy all kinds of missiles, but it doesn't necessarily have the best capability to deal with cruise missiles. And I think people would be quite surprised by that, and they would think that sort of Israel had that covered. And I just wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about that, because I think that would potentially alarm people and surprise them.
Yeah. Quite frankly, we have made huge strides against high trajectory threats.
Yeah.
Missiles, even mortar shells can be shot down.
Yeah.
With Iron Dome, we've done things that technologically seemed impossible.
Yeah.
20 or 30 years ago. Cruise missiles used to be the domain of the superpowers, Americans,
yeah.
American Tomahawks and others, a distant threat. It's becoming more real from Iran under the present circumstances. And there are certain, I'm not going to go too much, first of all, I'm not a technology man, but I, to the best of my understanding, I think there are certain fixes, but the technology is there.
Mm.
The transition from technological solutions to where to fully deployed, battle-worthy systems with wide region, wide territorial coverage requires a substantial budgetary investment, and this is precisely what the Prime Minister was driving for in the recent cabinet meeting on the subject.
Right. Because essentially, a cruise missile is sort of like a craft on its own. It flies at much lower altitude and at great speed.
It requires a different kind of detection system.
Yeah.
And a different interceptor.
Yeah.
Than the high trajectory.
But essentially, it's the point.
We have made our abilities manifest.
Yeah.
It's not so much a question of inability to respond as putting the right resources in order to translate technological possibilities into weapon systems.
Yeah, but it's essentially the development has been that Iran has cruise missiles, and I'm not sure entirely whether that's from Chinese technology or they're Chinese-made missiles, whether they made them their own, but essentially that's the game changer, isn't it, that they've developed this capability?
It's not a game changer. The game is still the same game. But it is a serious concern.
Right. Okay, thank you so much for joining us and for covering all that in so much detail and giving us such interesting thoughts about what the impact has been on the in Israel, the events in Syria. But thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome.